Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
Evening.
Good evening, indeed.
Greetings, Earthlings, of course.
Greetings, Earthlings, and those of you who may believe you are from other places as well, beyond the Earth. Perhaps we'll get to that one. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. We'd love to hear from you. And the text and WhatsApp number over the next 28 minutes is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And of course, we're also live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and as a podcast. With lots of things about talk about this evening, John. The supermoon, we'll get to that in a moment. How to clean your underwear on the moon, if we ever get there, and lots more besides. But we'll start, perhaps, shall we, with the what to see in the night sky. Yeah. Now that astronomical night is back, and I'll get to that in a moment as well.
We could explain how that one works indeed. Now, the space station has disappeared out of our evening skies as from the 28th only a few days ago, but it is back again on September the 14th until October the 3rd. My goodness, is this year flying. Gee, there we go. So we're talking about October already. Now, Mercury and Venus are very deep in the glow of sunset early in the week. You can use binoculars for about 15-20 minutes just after sunset. Then you're going to lose them, unfortunately, because they're quite low. Venus is a good one. Minus 4.2 on the scale. Mercury is only about 1/50th as bright, fading slightly this week from magnitude 0 to plus 0.2, but at least a tiny little bit higher up to the left of Venus. And Venus in a telescope is entering its most extreme crescent phase, and the thin cusps start extending around the planet's circumference support towards the forming of a complete ring. It's a fantastic thing to watch if you can just see it. We'll go into a little bit in detail why Venus looks a little bit young at the moment, and has been for years. And Mars also nearby as well, only magnitude plus 1.8. It's about 11 degrees upper left of Mercury. And Jupiter minus 2.4, still quite bright. It rises around midnight, which is nice to see, or a little after in the east-northeast. East-northeast, yes, over by the beginning of dawn, it shines very high towards the southeast. And Saturn, plus 0.7, it's dim in Aquarius at the moment. It rises in late twilight. It's highest in the south and the sharpest and steadiest in a telescope in the couple of hours just before dawn, if you want to get up to watch those. The two elusive ones, Uranus, Neptune, very dim. And quite high, actually, if you're looking for a view of Uranus, just a little bit left of Jupiter, if you can find Jupiter, and Neptune rises just after dark and is high in the south before dawn begins, about 20 degrees east of Saturn. So you can Google all this if you want to find out exactly where they are, or you can just look at the internet, it'll tell you exactly what you want to know on these. So the ones to watch, really, Mercury and Venus, but remember that they're going to disappear quickly after sunset. So that's the quick roundup of the planets.
Thank you, John. We get to the sun and the moon. We'll talk about the moon in a moment. We have the full supermoon. The first supermoon of this month it's effectively a full moon now, but in practice, it was exactly about 40 minutes ago at 7:30, the moon was full. But of course, a day or two either side, you wouldn't really notice the difference. But it's not currently up at the moment from our vantage point here in Dublin, but it will rise just later on this evening. Just before 10 o'clock.
Around 10 o'clock thereabouts, yeah. And with a bit of luck, the clouds will have disappeared if there are any anywhere. And you might get to see it a little bit earlier, but around 10 p.m. And, of course, you will get to see this, what we call the supermoon. And it's quite interesting because it occurs when the moon is closest to the Earth, and it can be 30% brighter than when it's at its furthest. So it means that it looks biggest and brightest at the full moon stage that the people will see in their lifetime. So the best time to watch is at moonrise, just as it creeps across the horizon, best looking out over the sea towards the east. And it also creates a thing called the moon illusion. And this can make the moon look even bigger to the human eye or brain combination as well. So you get the double effect on this one as well. And it's because the moon is in an elliptical orbit and just hits us at the right time, space, in our sky, rising above the horizon. And it's well worth watching if you can see it. Funny enough, I did see it last week quite late when it was at
last quarter.
I was surprised to see it. It looked particularly large as well, but I don't know whether that was meant to be or not. But
it does look large when it's on the nearer the horizon. I saw it last night, which was almost full, and it was about 11 o'clock or so. And yeah, it looked very impressive. But as we mentioned, it will rise tonight just before 10 o'clock here from Dublin. It'll be 99.8% phase, effectively still full though. And it will be due south of us just before 2 a.m. tomorrow morning. You wouldn't notice the difference when it'll be down to 99.7% waning gibbous moon. And when it sets tomorrow morning, just before 6 a.m., there'll only be half a percent of it not on view. 99.5% of the full face of the moon will be on view, and it'll rise again tomorrow evening at 10:18 p.m. when it'll be down to 98% phase. But again, would the human eye notice that? Your eye even looking up at it?
No.
Probably not. Not 2%.
No,
we wouldn't. The sun now rises in Dublin tomorrow at 5:42 a.m. Well, that's 11 minutes later than a week ago, and crosses the meridian, which means it'll be due south of us at 1:31 p.m., which is the same time as last week. And the sun will set at 9:19 p.m. tomorrow evening, so I can just about detect that closing in. That's about half an hour, more than half an hour. 35 minutes or so earlier than it was at the solstice. And from when the sun sets at 9:19 p.m. tomorrow until 10:02 p.m., we'll have civil twilight. And from then until just after 11 p.m., we'll have nautical twilight. And then we'll have astronomical twilight beginning just half an hour after midnight. And we'll begin again at 2:20 a.m. on the morning of Thursday. What that means is now, unlike a week ago where we had no astronomical night, tonight there'll be just under 2 hours of astronomical night. That also means there's 22 minutes less daylight than a week ago, and tomorrow there'll be another 3 minutes and 25 seconds less between sunrise and sunset, when there will be 15 hours and 37 minutes between sunrise and sunset. Just getting back to the planets a moment, if you want to try and find Saturn on Thursday in the evening, it will be 7 degrees to the upper right of the moon. So, of course, find the moon and go up and a bit right, 7 degrees. Mm-hmm. That is just a little less than the width of your fist at arm's length. That bright object there will be Saturn, magnitude plus 0.7, so you should no problem spotting us in the dark sky. And then, actually on Sunday the 6th, we'll be midway between the summer solstice and the autumnal equinox. So, is that what you call midsummer? From an astronomical point of view, summer begins on the solstice.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say this is midsummer. Not that you'd know from all the rain we've had in the past month, for sure. And next Monday, Venus is at aphelion, And in the evening, Jupiter will be 5 degrees to the lower left of the moon. So that's a good marker for you if you really want to discover where Jupiter is, which one of those bright spots in the sky is Jupiter. 5 degrees to the lower left of the moon, which is half the width of your fist at arm's length. So, as you say about Venus, it gets that thin, thin crescent if you're looking at it through a telescope. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got to have, as I was saying to you earlier, John, about the sun, and I got a message from a fellow astronomer in the IAS, the Irish Astronomical Society, saying, well, have a look at the sun, the sunspots. And so I had a look on my, of course, I have the my binoculars, 15 by 70s, with the handmade solar filters put on it. Oh, yeah, very, very impressive. I know it's very cloudy today for a lot of the time in a lot of parts of the country, but, was the biggest group of sun, the biggest sunspots and the biggest group of sunspots I've ever seen on the sun. And then just to verify that I wasn't imagining it, although I knew I wasn't, just look up spaceweather.com. And there are other websites where you can get live pictures of the sun. And it's, it's very impressive, of course, to see it yourself with your own eyes, the actual light from the sun, as opposed to an image on a screen. Yeah, nice and all as they
much
are.
Much better having looked
at it. It's like, when you're looking at Jupiter or Saturn through a telescope, it's just, fabulous, as opposed, even though you can get lovely, pretty pictures on an internet, on a screen, but when you see it yourself with your own eyes, it's a different story entirely.
Indeed. Now, just last Thursday, SpaceX successfully launched 22 Starlink satellites, and it had this payload. It was actually Thursday into Friday early on Florida's famed Cape Canaveral. I think that's a brilliant name. Still do, after having scrubbed the launch of the separate mission the night before. So the rocket launched at 12:01 EDT. We're about 5 hours ahead of that, something like that. Mm-hmm. So about 5 o'clock in the morning our time. And up to 4 backup launch opportunities were available to SpaceX to launch the nearly 24 satellites into low Earth orbit. So the timing was there to, if they had a little bit of trouble, to do that. So they got them into the skies and into space last Thursday into Friday, which was some feat of engineering all the same. And adds another 220 bits up into the low Earth orbit, bits and pieces that are flaking around at 17,500 kilometers per hour there, or even miles per hour. Mind you, it doesn't really matter how fast, it's still pretty quickly. Betelgeuse has come back into our news yet again. It's the study about the ones that's making waves, and by claiming that one of the brightest stars in the sky, and it is bright, and it might die in a spectacular explosion within our lifetime. So the study currently available online, and it's the left-hand shoulder of Orion, the other three stars in Orion, also known as Alpha Orionis. And it may have less than 300 years worth of fuel left in its core. So that doesn't really class us as in our lifetime. But it could have blown up already, you see. This is the thing. And when a star burns the last of those drops, its core will collapse into a black hole. It's big enough. It's 20 times the size of our sun at the moment, so it probably is. And in the process, it blasts out the outer layers at enormous speeds, up to 25,000 miles per hour or per second, and its fiery demise is what astronomers called a supernova explosion. Now, that's pretty close for a supernova, because it's only about 400 light years away, and in the case of Betelgeuse, it will be a spectacular sight for observers here on Earth. In fact, it will light up the whole Orion and blank them out, and it'll be interesting to see, but it's always becoming going. People have said it's going to explode. People said it's exploded already. It's on the way. Who knows?
Sometime within the next couple of hundred years, anyway. Yeah, or maybe. It might be a couple of thousand years.
Some sites say that would put a thing for the astronomers looking with the telescopes and things in the night sky, because it's bright as day nearly up there at that stage. So, anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's see what happens.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. That's 087-179-1032. Now, something we mentioned last week, John, about some debris washed up on a beach in Australia. And we were wondering, it's about 2 meters high, 6 foot tall, has some wires sticking out of it, mostly cylindrical, but it has been positively identified now, I believe, as part of
The Indians.
Perhaps you have some more
details. I have it here somewhere. Yeah. Maybe go back to it in just a second.
Okay.
We've always tons of stuff here to get through, so it's if we can do that.
Okay, then we get back to the Indian rocket and we'll discuss how to keep your underwear clean when you go to the moon and people start to live on the moon. We won't be flush, for want of a better word, with water and washing machines and won't be the usual type of laundry.
No,
so
you
have to design your clothes
the underwear. It's the ones that are just inside the spacesuit, and they're trying to invent these PEX-TEX, planetary exploration textiles, and it's just to line the inside of the spacesuits, because over time, and if they're going to spend time on the moon, there could be quite a lot of people using
the one spacesuit,
and this is what it is, and you can get microbial growth in things like that, and a lot of the new textiles that we have here on Earth for running and things like that are against microbes.
Yeah, but they have either usually silver or copper, which prevent the growth of microbes, but they can cause skin irritations for some people, and also when you wash them, I think that a lot of the material is washed out, the effectiveness is gone. So with these, this is a different technique now that they're going to use by embedding some other type of... It's actually material, isn't it, manufactured by other microbes that, strangely enough, had some type of antimicrobial activity itself. And, of course, again, this could lead to and should lead to innovations here back on planet Earth. But, there's a lot of research going into this type of work, because it won't be the usual casually throw our laundry into the washing machine and some detergent and away we go. You can't put it outside to dry. There has been no wind on the moon.
Indeed. So they reckon about 2,500 hours of use each of these suits will get. So they've got to invent something. And it's the biocidal advanced coating technology for reducing microbial activity, otherwise known as Bacterma. They have a great way of making these words up.
That's what we call a backronym. Acronym and work backwards.
Yeah, so there we go. So it's not necessarily the underwear. It's the ones that are lining the inside of the suits, which over time with many people using the suits... I think probably the easiest thing to do is stick them outside. Yep, and stick them outside and put them in the vacuum, and then all the microbes will die. So it's simple.
Yeah,
there's something they're deeply thinking about at the moment.
A lot of microbes can survive that type of material, especially if there are other microorganisms that produce spores. They can live in very harsh conditions, even survive radiation.
I have a book for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's called The Fundamentals of Space Missions. Came across this the other day. Mike Gruntman is the name. And it's a newly released book. It provides the comprehensive guide for students, instructors, and professionals alike in the field of space systems and missions. So I haven't had a chance to get my hands on one of these just yet. And it's written by Professor Mike Gruntman. Its name again, Fundamentals of Space Missions. And it gives you tests. Now, I always hated tests and exams and all that sort of stuff. So it has over 160 homework Yeah, I've done all that, and the exam problems were each accompanied by detailed solutions, so you're going to get the answers and things as well into that. So if you're into reading and studying and answering questions, and it's the best way to learn, really, but I think I'm just...
I've been there and done that.
Yeah, now, my future's behind me, as my father keeps saying. Yep, there you go. That's the way it is. So there you are, the fundamentals of space missions, just to put that in your Christmas list. There, I mentioned it.
You mentioned the C word, and we're only in 1st of July. You were mentioned earlier about the Venus, was it?
Well, there's lots of things, but before I go into that, China's giant telescope.
Is this the 500-metre radio
telescope? This is a monster of a thing, yeah.
Oh, they have robots cleaning it.
Yeah, they have it, and they all have little jobs. Now, they follow little tracks and things, so they have five intelligent robot systems and platforms for the maintenance of China's 500-metre aperture spherical radio telescope, otherwise to us known as FAST, and it's the world's largest single-dish radio telescope. And it's passed inspection and can be put into use now at this stage. And that was only passed last Wednesday. And the intelligent robots will be mainly used in testing and supporting cables and pulleys of FAST's feed, the automatic maintenance of its actuators and the laser targets on the reflector. And a bit of disassembling and an installation of feed receivers. So robots certainly coming back into... force, I would say, at the moment. So AI and this is coming up. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens there. So it's a monster. This is 500 meters of a telescope buried in the face of a mountain, like a big Corrie Lake without the water.
So that's bigger than the Arecibo. Do you know if the Arecibo is back in operation?
It is back in operation. It's looking at the skies in a slightly different way. And I think they're doing a lot of testing just at the moment because, as you know, it collapsed a number of years back. It was wrecked from the photographs we have seen from it. We didn't think it would come back at all, but they did. They got it going. And it's slightly smaller. I think it's only 100 metres across thereabouts.
Hmm. Alan in Kildare has been in touch. Thank you, Alan. He's reminded me, and I did read this earlier, the NASA this evening, 7:30, an hour ago, they're due to have a press conference about their UFO program. So I only know that the press conference was on and it's available on NASA TV as we speak, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't know yet what has happened or what they're saying. I read about it, that it was coming up, but I don't really expect any major revelations myself now. It's also reminded me of something in an article I do have with me about the sun umbrella, which is tethered to the asteroid which might help us in combating climate change. Basically a huge umbrella, but it weighs many thousands of tons, and you have an asteroid as a counterweight. Maybe we will go into that in a moment.
How are they going to work that one out? It's attach it to an asteroid. How to catch an asteroid? It must be in an orbit or something. I don't know. Are they going to push it into a different... I've just got the thing there about it as well. It's grappling with accelerating climate change, as we know. And the researchers are exploring the multitude of strategies to reduce global warming. So this is for the future, this particular one. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. Notice here also, Ben, that the Voyager 2 went silent.
Oh, yes.
With a temporary communication interruption here with Earth. And it's on an epic journey into the cosmos at the moment. NASA's Voyager 2 has temporarily lost contact with the blue planet. Now, what's this from? We just don't know. So it had an accidental deviation of the antenna's alignment on July the 21st, which is only last week, and has caused an unexpected silence in the spacecraft's interstellar communications. So at the moment, it's 12.3 billion. I'll say that again. That's got a lot of zeros after it. Billion miles away from Earth, slightly misaligned by its... the antenna by 2 degrees, so I presume they're just trying to fix that as well.
Of course, 2 degrees at that distance.
That's a miss.
That's a huge miss.
That's definitely a miss.
Yeah, the Strathpine, 3 billion miles, almost 20 billion kilometres. That's 20,000 million. That's 9, 10. That's a 2 and 10 zeros after.
That's quite a lot of zeros. Yeah, indeed it was. So they're trying to get that back just at the moment. So we'll see if we can keep an eye on that for next week to see if we get that back. But no doubt they will. So it's quite a long way away. So it takes a long time for information to get back and forwards from that particular one. NASA's Juno spacecraft. Mm-hmm. Don't often hear too much about this at the moment. It's planned was to go around Jupiter about 70-odd times. They've changed it a couple of bits and pieces. It's got a huge elliptical orbit, and at the moment it's getting ever closer to Jupiter's moon, Io. And it's the spinning solar-powered spacecraft that's going to take another look at the fiery Jovian moon, which has happened over the last couple of days. We'll see information coming back through that. Its closest approach, remarkably, is 13,700 miles from its surface. So the data is being collected at the moment. So at some stage, probably in the next 3 to 6 months, we'll see information, although that the NASA guys, whoever it is in charge of that particular unit, will be beaming back photos to themselves and give us a couple of jewels, I'd say, at the end of it. So that'll be good to watch as well.
Thank you, John. Maybe we'll finish on this. I know we're racing through a lot of trying to get through as many subjects as we can. Which unfortunately means we can't get into too much depth, I should say. I'm in enough debt as it is. I meant to say depth. There was a Freudian slip anyway. But something we mentioned a few weeks ago, this Aeolus mission, which is at the end of its lifetime, and we mentioned that it was, they were planning on a controlled re-entry because the satellite had done its job, and it wasn't designed for this, but they did manage it successfully. I think it was this morning or so, and some of it that survived the re-entry. Most of it burned up over the Antarctic.
Just the Antarctica, and I wonder if bits and pieces will appear on the surface there. So it came after a series of complex maneuvers that lowered Aeolus' orbit from the altitude of 320 kilometres to just 120 to re-enter the atmosphere and then burn up, but no doubt there are little bits left that will just sit on the surface of Antarctica and stick out like a sore thumb.
Yes, it was launched back in 2018, and at that time there was no... Now there's a general agreement that any satellites that launch should have basically a way of clearing up space after them, usually by deorbiting them. And it has done... the initial purpose of this was to measure wind velocities on Earth. It uses lasers and LIDARs and basically some scattering of some electromagnetic radiation off the particles of dust in the wind, and they'd be able to measure the wind velocities, and it helped with weather forecasting around the Earth.
Luckily enough, it's been hailed as one of the most successful Earth observation missions. I was going to go into safety training on the space station, etc., in space and everywhere else, but unfortunately we are out of time again.
We are indeed. Thank you, John, for that. And thank you, Alan, for the texts. Sorry, I couldn't go into more depth on some of those subjects which I had here in front of me, but that's the way of it sometimes. Don't forget our email address. You can write to us anytime on any questions, queries or comments you may have. We'd love to hear from you. It's astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And we're also available as a podcast, don't forget. And thanks to John Dixon for his latest news items. Thanks to James Sweeney and Conor Lennon for making this show available as a podcast and putting it up on astronomy.ie, and also for the people here in Dublin City FM who also put it up as a podcast on, I know it's on SoundCloud and perhaps other places. I'm not really au fait with all that podcasting stuff. I'm glad someone else does it, and I thank them very much for that. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China, 9 o'clock. Bren Lynott with Threads, 11 o'clock. Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe. And from midnight to 2 a.m., Jarrah, jazz, blues and soul music from Dave Barry and his program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John. Go out and have a look at that moon if you can. Tell us what you think of it. Take a photograph. Difficult enough to take a photograph of the moon. It can be.
It is, yeah. It can be. I have mastered it nearly at this stage. Anyway, good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.